Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hi there, it's Gina Gardner here, and I'm so pleased to welcome you to Thriving, Not Surviving. I've got a very, very special guest for you today, and I'm really excited to introduce Francis to you. I'm going to read his bio because it's just so impressive, so bear with me. Francis West is the CEO of Westek Limited, and more recently of Security Everywhere. His personal mission is to educate and protect over 1 million people from cyber attacks by 2023. And he does this through webinars, events, and the advanced cybersecurity solutions offered by Security Everywhere. He's based in Hertfordshire in the UK, and when he's not working, you'll find him on a go-kart or enjoying the outdoors with his family. As a business owner and father, Francis had first-hand experience in the damage that an unconscious click can do, either by your employees or even your child connected to your home Wi-Fi. The son of a brigadier in the South African Police Service, and having served in the South African Army himself, Francis has been trained to be alert and be aware of dangers at all times, and he uses his skill and his mission to protect over 1 million people from cyber attacks by 2023. Now, I have first-hand experience too of this when I had my Facebook account hacked into some 3 or 4 years ago. I'd spent a lot of time building up my followers, and every time I contacted Facebook, they sent the reply to the hackers who had become the admin. Hundreds of pounds later, I failed miserably to get anything done about it. And in the end, I had to start up another account. Now, you'd think that's when all of my problems would have died. But 3 years later, up popped the old account and it completely mucked up everything yet again. So that's just small fry. So welcome. Thank you very much indeed. Would you please share with us a little about your story? I mean, how did you come to be working in this field?
Gina, thank you very much for having me on your show today. I've seen some of your other work that you've done, and I know it's absolutely brilliant. And thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure. Well,
I've been providing IT support solutions and services to small to medium-sized businesses worldwide for the last 30 years. But in the last 3 years, I would say 4 years ago, I saw the tsunami of what I call cyber attacks or scams coming out. And we made a conscious decision as a business and my fellow business owner to change our focus. Because a lot of small companies, unfortunately, just do not have the know-how or the expertise to protect them properly. They're still relying on very old software and old solutions. And because they can't see the threat, they think it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So I've been very fortunate because I've been invited recently to sit on a panel of 40 other security specialists, including, you know, the Home Office, multiple police forces in the UK. I also work with banks, councils, the CBI, CA, you name it, anybody that wants to listen. And because of all the threats I've seen, and especially since the lockdown here in the UK, in the last 3 weeks, we've seen a 660% increase in scams. And I feel...
I'm just going to stop you and ask you to repeat that figure again. It's just mind-blowing.
It's frightening. In all the 3 years now that I've been dealing with this stuff, we have never seen this. It is 660% increase in scams. Good. In the last 3 weeks. So, You know, a lot of our clients, some of our clients runs, you know, our security aware solution, and some don't. And where we're running our security aware solution, we've seen the attacks going through the roof. And of course, we've been able to identify, quarantine, and kill those attacks. But all our clients who are not running the solution, we don't know. So, and now to make it worse, of course, you've got all these home workers sitting at home, connecting to the same wireless network as their mother, their brother, their sister, you know, in the same household. So one machine gets infected, that infection jumps over to the mother or father's work PC, which is of course connected, if I may get a bit technical, with a VPN, a virtual private network, to the office. The only thing that's going to happen is that the infection will securely jump down the VPN tunnel and take out the entire office. So more I see this stuff, the more I've decided about a year ago, you know, I first set the number at 100,000 I made it my mission to educate and protect at least 1 million people now, because, you know, like you, we do a lot of work on LinkedIn, and every day I post something just to educate people, because the more they can see the threats through these eyes, these are from Specsavers, but the things I see compared to other people, I don't know. But, you know, I always tell people, this is not just my responsibility. This is a team effort. You know, we all need to work together and educate, you know, everybody we care about, because these guys are relentless.
I mean, without awareness, you can't do anything, can you?
No, you can't fix something you don't know about.
No.
So, you know, if I know a lot of stats. Sorry, Gina. I mean, when I do my cybersecurity talks, you know, I mention a lot of stats. But the latest stat, there's a website that my business partner and I went on to just before the lockdown that shows the latest threat scams, okay? Yeah. And if you heard a talk of mine, say, 6 months ago, I would have said to you, every 4 seconds, there's a new version of ransom coming out on the planet. Do you know what it is now?
Yeah.
Every second, there's 4 new versions of malware ransom being released on the planet. And the problem, yeah?
Can I just stop you before you go? Because for many people listening to this, they may not be aware of what ransom is.
No, okay. So thank you for stopping, because I, you know, sometimes I just talk and it's, you need somebody to give me a slap around the face to go, what do you mean? A ransom is, imagine like in the old good old days where somebody would hijack you and they'll say, well, pay me, you know, $1 million and then I'll give you your child back or your husband back.
Actually,
and now it's
ransom.
Yeah, it's a lot worse. So somebody, an email comes in, you click on the link, and then what happens is a piece of software, we call it a payload, a piece of software that runs on your computer, and they might not attack you straight away. I've seen instances where they wait 6 months, a year, 2 years, and all that time they'll watch you. They'll look at everything you do. And when they're ready, and I've seen this with my own eyes, they will take you out. And they'll encrypt all your files on your servers, even in your cloud servers, on your PCs. And then they'll lock it down and they say, pay me this money, normally in Bitcoin, or, sorry, you can never see your data again. And my recommendation is, please, never, ever, ever, ever pay the ransom. Because if you pay it, your chance of getting back is very, very little.
Yes.
So that's why backups are so important. That's why having the right security solution that can detect unknown threats.
Yes.
Unknown threats is a secret here. You know, not the problem that we have with today's solutions is that it only protects you against known threats. And remember what I said to you, every second?
Yes.
Every second, 4 new versions. So by the time Microsoft releases an update, and by the time the antivirus companies catch up, you're looking at a 2 to 4 week window. Do you see the problem?
I can see that there are a lot of seconds in 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot of seconds.
So I think the vast majority of people who are watching this are probably versions of me, quite naive about security. They think, I bought my computer, my Mac, my laptop.
Yeah.
I've got a virus checker on it. So, of course, I'm safe. What would you say to them?
Let me give you a case study. Okay, only last week, a very good friend of mine, his daughter comes back from uni and she runs a Mac, a little iMac, you know, those lovely laptops. And he's already running our security everywhere solution on all his other machines. He said, I'm not allowing you to connect your laptop to our home's, you know, network until you install, you know, Sentry Defender, which is the brand of the software that we use. And we installed it. And if I tell you, Gina, within the first 17 minutes, we found 238 different infections on her laptop. And 13 minutes later, we killed all the infection. We thought our system was going overdrive because we kept on getting bing, 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 you know, alerts to say that this laptop was getting more and more infection. Meantime, it was just busy cleaning it. Now, it was already running ABG and already running malware bytes. And even with those two solutions, and remember it's a Mac. Remember the myth, Macs can't get infected.
Yeah.
Okay. What can I say? Now it's properly protected, but before that, she was just spreading. Could you imagine now all her mates who are connecting to the same Wi-Fi, either at the uni or at a house, you know, the house where they all share. And I said to him, I said this to the dad, tell your daughter to phone your flatmates or your housemates and tell them that they could also be infected.
Yes.
You know, people say to me, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but they say, what's the difference between coronavirus and suffering a cyber attack? I'll tell you the difference. The difference with cyber with coronavirus, we're all sitting at home and we carry on working. You suffer a cyber attack or, like you said, a ransom attack, everybody stops working in your organization. You see, it's. I know people are dying, but this is terrible.
As you were saying this, you know, one of the things that struck me is that whilst, as you point out, having a cyber attack can stop you dead in your tracks, there are also many similarities in terms of the coronavirus, in terms of its capacity to spread,
yeah,
and that you can't see who's a carrier and who's not.
I've never seen so many similarities. It's just frightening. They are, but I think this is a good thing. If I can turn some positive out of the whole coronavirus, that people, hopefully, when I start speaking to them about these risks and I relate it back to the coronavirus, they're starting to visualize it. I think when people start visualizing the threats, they start to understand the threats. And when they start understanding the threats, they start becoming more skeptical or more aware. And then they start thinking about, and I excuse the pun, they need to self-isolate their work laptop.
Yeah.
And it's so easy. All you have to do is, you know, when you're sitting at home, you set up a guest Wi-Fi at home on your guest router, because you can then connect your machine to the guest Wi-Fi and leave everybody else on the other Wi-Fi. And if they get infected, it won't jump over to your machine that's sitting on the guest Wi-Fi. It's that simple.
I'd like to talk about solutions and ways forward. Before I do, many of our listeners aren't in the UK.
Sure.
I could be sitting there thinking, well, that's the UK, but where in America or where in Australia or where in Dubai? What would you say to them?
Doesn't matter. A PC is a PC. A Mac is a Mac. A Linux box is Linux. It doesn't matter what machine you are, where you're on the planet. The hackers don't care. They don't care if you've got one machine or 1,000 machines.
Yes.
All the solutions that we've just spoken about or that I'm applying or that I'm going to recommend goes on any machine, any language, anywhere.
And is this true for people who are, I'll call them private citizens who are not working, as well as sole traders and big organizations, presumably, it's true for us all?
Absolutely. If I tell you in certain countries, they are the size of rugby fields full of people where they walk in at 9 o'clock and they leave at 5:30 and it's their job to hack people around the planet. In some countries, £50 or $15 is somebody's month's wages. So it's a numbers game. It's just a pure numbers game. And that's why you've got to be so alert. And that's why you've got to have so many more layers in protection. Because one of my favorite things I tell people is the following. Let me test you, Gina.
Okay.
So tell me, Gina, how many keys do you need to get into your car?
One.
How many keys do I need to get into your office?
One.
How many keys do I need to get into your back door?
One.
At home. How many keys do you think a hacker needs to get into your entire life?
One.
I'll rest my case.
Yes. Now, my show is all about looking for solutions.
Sure.
Okay. And you've identified a very significant problem, and one that I hope that our listeners and viewers are really taking on board, mm-hmm, and not switching off thinking it could only happen to other people.
Please do.
But I know that you're a very practical guy and that you are incredibly helpful. So I'd like to spend the rest of our time looking at how can people help themselves? How can they protect themselves in a sensible way?
Sure. Okay, so where do you want me to start? I mean, there's so many different areas we can talk about.
I know that let's start with people who are working from home.
Okay.
Who work from home generally or are now working from home because of the lockdown and so on. And I think that's going to continue after the lockdown, which is what I think it would be helpful.
I agree. I mean, I think the way we're doing business today has completely changed from 2 months ago. And by the time people listen to this, I think a lot of the stuff we're doing today will follow through forever, for that matter. It's funny, before this whole lockdown started, I predicted that Teams, you know Microsoft Teams?
Yes.
Will be the next big thing after email. And people said, wow. And now it's already happening because people are communicating more face-to-face using Teams and Zoom and other platforms than they are sending emails, for instance. Yes. Okay. But let's talk about solutions. So for me, the first thing you've got to think about is about isolating or protecting the island.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean, it's protecting the device that you're coming from. A lot of people, when I speak to them, say, there's nothing on my machine. You know, all my data is in the insecure cloud service. I'm like, that's fantastic. I'm so glad to hear this. So tell me. And let me give you a case study because this works a treat. So only last week, I signed up a small company. He runs a fitness firm, only two staff, two users, okay? And he said, you know what? I was recommended to you, Francis, but I'm not sure really why. I don't need any security stuff. You know, my laptop doesn't store any data. I'm like, do you mind if we run through this? He said, of course not. I said, so you've got really wealthy clients? He said, yes. So you've got this online portal you told me about earlier where we log about their weight and their height and their date of birth and everything about their fitness program. Yeah. So how do you get there? Oh, no, I just log on from my laptop. I said, that's interesting because imagine I'm a hacker. I'm known as a white hat hacker. I do this purely for demonstration purposes. I'll send you a link. You'll click on the link. You won't even know. And now from the very next second, every time you log on to that secure website to log your personal clients' personal information in, I'm recording every single keystroke. So when I'm ready, I'll now log on to the same portal, secure portal, and I'll look at all the information about those clients. How does it make you feel? He said, Francis, where do I sign? I said, what do you mean? He said, how do I fix this? I said, well, my recommendation is you put a solution on the machine that can identify instantly if somebody is trying to send data out of your computer without your knowledge. So that's my first recommendation. You need a solution, you know, like the ones we've got with Security Everywhere that's used by the likes of Barclays, Netflix, NASDAQ, TGI Fridays, because they've figured out that you need to control, you need to secure what I call the island. Because once the island is secure, everything you go from there is going to be so much more secure, number one. Number two, the next thing you need to do is let's take worst case scenarios. Let's say somebody somehow, let's say you didn't run, you know, Sentry, you know, our solution on your laptop, you just ran normal antivirus and somebody got on your laptop and they managed to log on to, let's use Facebook, let's use your scenario, right? Let me ask you, Gina, to log on to your Facebook account, how many pieces of information do I need?
You need my username and my password.
And you said that publicly. Okay, we need to talk afterwards. So the second piece of information we need to do immediately when we come off this call is we need to set up what we call multi-factor authentication.
Right.
Okay, so it's so easily done, and I'll explain why. And it's free, so by the way. What you do, you download an app called Authenticator. Now, that's the Microsoft version.
Yeah.
You see, I'm just showing it to the camera now.
You can't actually see anything, to be fair.
Okay, let me go a bit closer. There,
yes.
If you look closely, you'll see there's codes. I mean, I've got 22 of my applications are locked down with multi-factor authentication. Now, this is how it works. So if somebody tries to log on to your Facebook account,
Yes.
The moment you've set this up, and again, if you want to learn how to set up, you just type in Google, how do I lock down my Facebook account with multi-factor authentication?
There is a third layer that they actually...
I'll just explain how it works. This code is unique. This code only lasts for 30 seconds, Gina. So unless somebody is putting a gun against my head right now, they will not get this code.
Right.
So therefore, if somebody can access, or let's say I managed to get on your system and I found your login details on the dark web, I can't get into your Facebook because I don't have this device with the code in my hand. And it's that simple. So you need to go.
Isn't it?
Say again?
It's a no-brainer.
Of course. You would think so. The banks have been doing this for years and years and years. And that's why not banks don't get hacked that easily. You know, the problem that we have in cybersecurity is what I call the picnics, if I may say so. Ever heard of picnics?
No.
Problem in chair, not in computer. Okay. No. But it's true, because the human, us, you, me, is the biggest threat. Because if we are the last line of defense, okay, so we need to put these few systems in place to make sure that the hackers can't get their hands on our login details. And if they do, at least they don't have your phone sitting next to them, which means they can't log on. And the whole thing we're trying to achieve here, Gina, is imagine, you know, when a burglar drives down the road.
Yeah.
They're going to go to the house that doesn't have a dog, that doesn't have ring.com, that doesn't have, you know, CCTV. They're going to go to the house that's the easiest one to break in. And that's all we're trying to achieve here. We're trying to put multiple layers in place so that the hackers can go to your neighbor. Sorry, neighbor. You know, or the next person, or the next small company, or the next home worker. That's all.
Why do you think that this information is either not readily available or not listened to? Because when you speak and you offer that case study, it makes such sense. Where's the resistance to actually taking note of this, do you think?
What a fantastic question. And I mean this with the most sincerity. Now, when I was at this meeting 2 weeks before the lockdown, and there were these 40 people in the room, and the guy from the MI5 guy, he said, and the guy from CBI, they said the biggest problem they have is they've got the information is there. So the, you know, the NCSC that we work with, the National Cyber Security Center, they are releasing the most amazing amount of information almost on a daily basis. The problem that we have, like you just said, is that the smaller, the bigger companies have resource, they've got the money, they can do something about it, but the smaller company or the home worker or the single person or single mom, they don't have time to go and download this information. So I put my hand up and I said, I would like to be the voice. And I do. I really mean it. I want to get on radio. I want to get on TV and actually promote this so that every time I tell my story or share this information, it's another person that we are protecting from hackers and scammers, Gina. And unfortunately, until people start taking this more seriously, and they start reading our posts or reading the information that's out there, they will just be sitting ducks, that's all.
What strikes me is that if I was wanting to get this out there, you know that in my previous incarnation, I was the head teacher or principal of a large school. This should be being taught to pupils in school, particularly secondary age, those children who are teenage and beyond. Why is it not being taught at university as part of their general studies in terms of preparing for life? Yeah. Why isn't it so much more evident in everyday life that we have this information in user speak, not in technical speak?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Again, we can only speak for the UK right now, but I don't know if you've noticed on ITV, on BBC News every morning, there's almost a day that doesn't go by where they don't have somebody talking about the latest scam and warning people against it. So I don't think it's a question now of people not getting the information. It's the problem, that, again, to reiterate what you said, it's they don't know where to start.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
And they just put their head in the sand and they hope for the best.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, I don't know if you remember, was it Travelex? I'm sure they don't mind me mentioning their name, but you know, they went down just before Christmas. So just before New Year, and they were on pen and paper. They must have lost millions and millions and millions and millions, okay? And they reckon the hackers were on their systems for 6 months.
Good gracious.
Before they found out. I think they were on for longer.
Right.
And I did a...
money, you're going to be prepared to wait for the long game, aren't you?
But precisely. But you know what, Gina? Again, I look at when we look at people's simple things, like their email system. Here's another tip, right? When you set up your Office 365 or your Gmail system, you are supposed to set up what we call the three basic email records. And your IT provider should be able to do it. And they are the SPF, I'm going to get technical, DMARC, and DKIM records. Now, if you set up those three simple records, which should take, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes to do online, you are reducing your chances of a hacker impersonating your email by something like 80 or 90%. Would you believe me if I tell you, if I do 1,000 dark web reports for people, maybe 2% have those in place? Two.
I'm not surprised because I've never heard of that. And I'm not the most technical person, but
yeah,
my school was one of the first schools in 1984 to have computers. And I've been using them since 1984. Most of our listeners weren't born then.
No, but okay. So to come back to your question there. So, you know, my 10-year-old, now let me tell you about another site. I don't know if you've ever heard about this site called Shodan.io, Shodan.io, Shodan. Now, you can't make this up. I showed this to my 10-year-old son the other day. Now, let me tell you another little story. Before the whole lockdown happened, in my village, I was asked by the local parish council to go and put Wi-Fi, you know, because I live locally, and they know I'm in IT and security. Can I help? No problem. So I went there, and I'm going to name and shame now the company because I think they need to know about this. So they decided to buy TalkTalk broadband because TalkTalk was the cheapest. Now, when I went there to do the installation, can you guess what the username and password was for that router?
Password?
And the username?
Their name.
No, close. Okay, but let me tell you what the username and password was. Admin and admin.
Oh, okay.
Now, here's the thing. Shodan scrapes the planet every 24 hours and looks for devices that has either admin, 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 no password, or admin and password as a password. And they list them publicly. We could, if we had the time, I could show you now. We can log on to baby alarms. We can go into CCTV. We can go into industrial control systems, and all for free. It's not even on the dark web. And this is why I think it's criminal of a company like TalkTalk these days still to send out an internet router with a default username, password, admin, admin. Because if it wasn't me to go there and set up and having my security knowledge, if it was just somebody that has no knowledge, they would have just plugged in and off they went and never thought anything of it.
No. I'm gobsmacked.
I know. You can't make this stuff up. You just can't make it up. And this is why, you know, I take this so personally.
We're running out of time. So where can people find you and how can they find out more about protecting themselves in a sensible way?
Well, like I said, you know, we do a lot of posts on LinkedIn. So please follow me on LinkedIn. Look for Francis West. You'll see Security Advocate. Number one, number two, please come onto our website, security-everywhere.com. And my email address is francis.w@security-everywhere.com. Or you're welcome to give me a call, even on my mobile. You know, we've got clients worldwide, but +44 787 255 2555. And I'll give you free advice. And if you want to take it further, then we can give you simple solutions like ours that will instantly put our security blanket around you and keep you safe.
And we'll make sure that all of those details are in the show notes. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. And on behalf of all of those people who are going to save themselves a lot of heartache, thank you again. We're going to take a short break now, and we're going to have the second half of the show, which is Genuine Chats with Rachel and I. See you in a couple of minutes. Thanks very much.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com, or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
There and welcome back. This is the second part of the show where I'm joined by my good friend Rachel Davidson, and we talk about a particular theme. And today's theme is all about learned helplessness, both in your personal life and also your professional life. What do I mean by learned helplessness? Well, have you ever come across people whose immediate response is, I don't understand, or I can't do that? And what they're waiting for is for you to rescue them, that you will rush in and say, it's all right, I'll do it. And that becomes a habit for them and a habit for you. And the problem with that as an approach is that they never learn to do it for themselves. And they start to believe that they're not going to understand, and they start to believe that they can't possibly do it. Put that into the work context, and you have many leaders of teams and organizations where they are run ragged because everybody wants them to confirm or deny that what the team or the team member is doing is okay. And the leader becomes the absolute arbiter of standards, mm-hmm. and people take no responsibility for that. Now, the challenge with that is twofold. Firstly, the leader can't get on to be strategic because they're so busy, immersed in the operational side of things, being the judge of whether something is good, bad, or indifferent. But what's equally important, if not more so, is that they are training their staff not to think for themselves, to be helpless, to have no sense of taking responsibility and ownership for individual performance and shared responsibility for the performance of everyone. And as a result of that, everything becomes better is that instead of being able to get on strategically with what they're doing, that they end up being totally immersed in the operational side of things, being the arbiter of what's good, bad, or indifferent. The reality is that if you want people to think for themselves and to be the judge of their own performance, and to have a sense of ownership of their own performance and a shared ownership of the performance of the team or the organisation, then you have to develop a culture where people feel safe to get it wrong. Now, I don't mean to get it wrong endlessly, but to get it wrong and to learn from that, because we all learn better from our mistakes than we actually do deep learning when things go right, because we don't question it. So learned helplessness is one of those things that for all of us, we need to be very mindful, both in terms of, are we supporting other people's learned helplessness, or are we engaging in learned helplessness ourselves? And I know I'm guilty of that, particularly when it comes to technology. There are lots of times that I'll come to you or I'll come to my technical team and say, I don't understand. And the reality is I don't understand. But I am very inclined to let other people do it rather than learn. And so I think all of us have our particular areas where we have learned habits of helplessness. So Rachel, for you, what does learned helplessness look like and what are the implications?
In my experience, all learned helplessness comes from a sense of fear. It's the once bitten, twice shy scenario. And in my experience, it's because of an autocratic controlling leadership style, where if anybody shows initiative or goes off the path that the leader is wishing, they're punished severely in some sense, such that the leader feels that they've done the right thing, controlled the team, ensured success, whatever the justification is in their head, of course. And what it does is it suppresses the other individuals into not thinking, because it's demonstrated that when you thought and did something slightly off track, it was not welcomed.
No.
And more than that, there was a threat possibly in all this. So it's a terribly frustrating place to be. I've worked in teams that are terribly helpless because of the leader's style. And the irony is that the leader, certainly in my experience, would get more and more frustrated at the stupidity of his team. Not seeing how he was creating the circumstances around him, not wishing to hear feedback around, but when you bit Tom's head off for doing something that was quite reasonable, but not quite what you'd asked, but actually, if you'd have thought about it, when that kind of feedback was given, again, a very rigid defensive stance was taken. So you quickly learn with people like that to if you're stuck earning money from them, to just be helpless, in the sense that don't think, you're not being paid to think. It's that you're not paid to think, you're both paid to do. And so what you do is you become very childlike and you simply do the face value of what you have been asked, and you certainly don't think about any of, but hang on a minute, is this the best way, or have they considered this, or there's this coming along, isn't there? God, don't tell him that there's something coming along, wait for him to find out.
I think you're absolutely right, and the challenge, I think, particularly for businesses today, is that we are within a situation of fast-paced change. And that everything is reliant upon one person to be the fount of all knowledge and to be the person who is the arbiter of everything. The pace at which you can respond and anticipate to that change is dictated by the person who is the one who everybody looks to have all the answers. And in reality, nobody has all the answers. And I think that the needing to be seen to be right for many leaders is where this starts. That, if I do it myself, then at least I know it's done properly. And, recognizing that in the development of people thinking for themselves, and ideally what you want is a highly skilled and honed team who have the capacity to think for themselves and outside the box, but within the parameters that you as a leader create so it's safe for the business, then that's the ideal, because you not only have the leader's view and experience and expertise, but you can actually embrace all of the expertise and enthusiasms and skill set of all of the people involved.
Yeah, I mean, there are definite examples in society where such a collaborative sort of creative let's sit around and talk about it moments. They're just not applicable. I mean, the army, for instance, there is a very good reason why when you go into the army, you are deliberately broken down.
Yes.
You know, the training is all based around removing a sense of independence in regard to making decisions. So, you know, especially at the extreme levels where, you know, the elite forces, where you are allowed to think, but only within set parameters, very clear parameters. And you're certainly not allowed to question outside of
in
those
that
parameters.
Moment, no.
Because obviously, if you're sent in as an elite force to do something that is highly dangerous, they want you to just follow the orders and yes, you know, make decisions in the sense that if some circumstances change and that would make the orders impossible, then move within certain parameters
yes.
to then increase the chances of success, whatever. But again, not to actually just stop and say, why am I doing this?
Yes.
What, you know. So certain pieces of society, brain surgeons, you know, critical pilots,
people who are working in highly dangerous environments such as nuclear power stations or chemical plants.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yes.
In certain circumstances, there is a way, a set way. But actually, even if we look at those,
there will be
some kind of circle going on.
Yeah.
Not in the actual front line, possibly, to continue the military analogy. But if they are wanting to stay relevant, then there always has to be this feedback loop of, are we doing the right thing?
Is it still working?
Yeah.
Is
this the best way to train a massive soldier? Is this the best way to do this brain surgeon? And systems always fail when there isn't that understanding of, if we exclude everything to just what we know,
yeah,
well, frankly, we would still think that the sun went around the earth. Yeah, it's only because humanity questions and isn't fundamentally helpless that we have
yeah.
development.
And I think, you know, when things in those industries where things are going well and people stick to the rules, then that's fine. But as soon as things start to break down because there's been a malfunction, then you need people who can think on their feet within the parameters of understanding the industry and the geography, if you like.
Yeah.
But I'd like to take it for a moment. Let's take it back into the family situation.
Uh-huh.
You have a toddler. The toddler is determined to dress themselves and you're in a hurry. And like all toddlers, they don't know their left from their right. They don't know how to tie up their shoelaces.
Mm-hmm.
And they struggle to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can remember, if I go back to my school time as a principal, as a head teacher, of having the conversation with parents and saying to them, there are times when you need to let children struggle. Not too much, not to the point where they are completely overwhelmed. But if you rush in and you save them at the first sign that things are a little bit tricky, they're not going to learn resilience.
Mm.
And I think in today's modern world, one of the things that the skill sets that we, is it a skill set? I'm not sure. But what we need is the capacity to get up and try again when something doesn't work. And I think the danger is that we, to a large extent in many organisations, it's a nanny state. That people don't think for themselves. And then when the proverbial hits the fan, that people aren't resourced either to think outside the box or to manage when what they expect doesn't happen.
It's quite a compelling message to some mindsets, isn't it?
Yeah.
If, for example, I had the mindset where I actually didn't want to do that much with my life and I was quite happy to do the barest minimum, then it's a very compelling mindset to say, oh, you can't do this, and don't worry, somebody else will do it, and it's somebody else's fault, and you don't have
yeah.
to do the work, just look for somebody else to do the work for you, and because ultimately that's often easier. It's not better.
And it often feels easy.
In the moment.
But the trouble with it as an approach is actually that bit may get easier, but ultimately life gets more difficult because the parameters of your life, instead of opening up and being full of possibilities, they get closed down and become narrower and narrower and narrower to the point where it's completely unsatisfying.
So if you think of that toddler, if that toddler takes the decision that they're never going to learn to dress themselves, and you know, an extreme example, decides that that is literally going to be the case for the rest of their life, then as a 30-year-old who can't dress themselves...
Well, I'm reminded of two conversations when I was a principal. One was with a parent who was taking issue with the fact that we asked children to wear plimsolls or trainers for PE. Mm. And at that time, you could get those with laces, mm-hmm. and you could get those with Velcro. Mm-hmm. I've no doubt that's still the case. Yeah. And having the discussion with the parent who said, well, I'm only going to buy him Velcro because he struggles to tie his shoelaces. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, you know, what are you going to do when he's a 30-year-old man? And, you know, he's got a good job. Is he only going to wear shoes that have got Velcro fastenings? Mm-hmm. Is he never going to learn to tie his shoelaces? If you take the time now, that's a skill that he will have that will not only help him with his laces, but you know, there are other times when tying a bow or a knot is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And at the time, she was really quite cross with me. Interestingly, later on, she came to see me. This is as the pupil got to the end of his school life, where he was reliant upon her for everything and wouldn't do his homework on his own, wouldn't actually do pretty much anything on his own. And she was worried about him going up into the next school and how would he cope because the children started to make fun of him. And you have to consider the long-term effect of sticking with a process where you don't give people an opportunity to think.
To grow.
Now, the issue is that not only is it a challenge for the people involved, it's also a challenge for the leader, because to start with, you have to wean them away from a behaviour that actually you have deepened by the very way in which you have helped them grow into learned helplessness.
Well, yeah, you have to win back their trust, that when you say, actually, no, I do want you to think for yourself, that you're not going to punish them for it.
That's one thing, that actually that it's safe to think for yourself. Mm. And I do think that this isn't just about casting people off and saying, go and do it alone. No. It is about setting very clear parameters and rewarding the behaviours that you want and explaining when they're not, why. And I think the reason why is vital in all of this, and do it in small steps. It's not that you just cast people adrift and say get on with it, but you create parameters, you create a learning environment. And I think one of the best ways to do that is open questions. So when they come and say, is this all right, saying, what do you think? And when they give you the answer, so tell me, what have you based that judgment on? What are you looking for? Or having a conversation in terms of saying to individuals and to the whole staff, we want this to be a learning environment. So you're going to teach other people, and part of that teaching is to help other people understand what they've got to do, why they're doing it, and how they do it.
Yeah.
And by increasing people's awareness of how to learn and how to teach, then everybody starts to think for themselves, and that learned helplessness can be turned round into learned collaboration, learned independence, learned responsibility. And I'd urge anyone listening to this, if you're a parent and you have children, encourage them, age and ability appropriate, to take responsibility for the things that they can do. And it might be a bit messy to start with, but ultimately it will pay off.
Yeah, and if you're a leader that cannot accept that other human beings have good ideas and good inputs,
you're not a leader.
Then you probably need to just lead robots.
You're not, in my opinion, you're not a leader, and you're certainly not an enlightened leader. Because if you are so insecure that the only opinion that you're going to value is yours, then it's time to do something about that. And, you know, in a the Enlightened Leadership Program is all about helping people lead in an enlightened way, and not only be able to have the confidence to do it, but to have the tools to do it. So thank you very much for joining us today. Really love to have you, and we'll see you in the next show. Rachel Davidson is a great novelist. She has written two spiritual novels, The Point of Me and The Truth of Her. Number three is well on the way, and I can't wait to read it. I've written lots of self-help books, both in terms of personal and in terms of leadership. You can find all of those books at Amazon, but you can also find them on the genuinely-you.com website. If you're interested in enlightened leadership, then it's enlightenedleadership.co. Look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks very much. Take care now.